Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, I'm Larry Mueller, broadcasting today from the Bayfield Pavilion in Bayfield, Wisconsin. We're kicking off Bayfield in Bloom. It's a great celebration that goes on for a month. Your chance to see how beautiful this northern part of the state is. And, of course, I have some guests to answer all of your questions. A big thanks to everybody, by the way, for showing up today. Give us a little applause here so I can hear that. That's a big crowd. That's a big crowd. And a special thanks to everybody who's come, including the we got a bus trip from Marshfield, Wood County Master Gardeners, and the Ashland Bayfield Master Gardeners are here in full force. In fact, we could probably just go right around the audience and get the answers to all of the questions. Tell you what, if you'd like to join in with a question or comment, give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234. Or if you're in the Madison area, reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. I'd like to introduce my guest for today. Art Odie is very involved in the Bayfield Chamber, helping put on the Bayfield in Bloom event. He's a horticulturist, landscaper, a judge for the America in Bloom competition, and it's always fun to have him. He's been a guest now for a few times, and I really enjoyed having him. Art, welcome.
Well, thank you very much, Larry.
Thanks very much for being with us today. Jason Fishbach is the Ashland Bayfield County Extension Agricultural Agent. Brand new on the job. Jason, welcome.
Thanks a lot, Larry.
And my old friend Don Kissinger of the West Central Regional Urban Forestry, he's the coordinator for that outfit out of the DNR. His office is in Wausau. Don and I have had a number of, dealings, I guess, as you might say. I'm a member of the Dane County Tree Board, and so been involved in tree activities, and so Don and I have crossed paths many times. Don, welcome.
Thank you.
So I tell you what, there's almost no plant question that you could ask that these three couldn't answer. I'm just about convinced of it. And again, I'll give the number 1-800-642-1234 in Madison at 263-1890. And I'm inviting listeners from the audience. Now, the Master Gardeners might be able to think up some fiendish questions to ask that they might not be able to answer. But we hope they'll be able to answer them all. And Art Odie, I want to start just by asking you a little bit about Bayfield in Bloom, because it's not just a one day. We're kicking it off today, but it's something that happens over a whole month.
Well, we've got, as you say, Larry, a whole month of fun activities, and it's really a way to show everybody in the state what Bayfield is all about. This is a wonderful place, and it's a great place for gardening, and people never believe that until they come up here and experience the weather, because we're so moderated by the big lake out here, cooler in the summer and warmer in the winter. And we really invite everybody who's listening and those who are not listening to come up during our Bayfield in Bloom activities. We've got a lot of things going on. We've had a great day so far already. We started with the fourth grade Bayfield Public School class coming down for our belated Arbor Day tree planting this morning, and we planted a chinkapin oak out on the park that juts out into the lake, and we're hoping it will do well. And the kids were extremely well behaved, and we just loved having them. And we're also going to have a number of activities here today. One that I'm particularly interested in is Rain Barrels 101, and Jane Edwards, who's a member of our Bayfield Tree Board and has worked with the City of Superior for many years, with Rain Barrels is going to help make Bayfield, which used to be the city of fountains, the city of rain barrels. I'm just high on rain barrels. We're going to go rain barrels here.
She lugged one along with her, too, today.
Yep. And we have a lot of events, more than I can possibly enumerate here. But please get on your computer, go to www.bayfield.org, and see what's happening for the next month. Just a few highlights here. We've got the Apple Blossom Run tomorrow morning, and on Sunday, May 20th. This is a great activity, Farming with Mother Nature, a walking tour of a sustainable farm. This is Rick Dale's farm out on Highway J, and you really have to see what's going on here with sustainable farming and with small berry farming and apple orcharding in this area. It's wonderful. Also, Saturday, June 2nd, Bayfield Heritage Plant Sale in Fountain Garden Park, which is right on the south end of town as you come in on Highway 13. This is a wonderful plant sale. Absolutely all sorts of unusual things that are grown by master gardeners and other gardeners here in town, and they're all available at very reasonable prices. So please come for that. We have garden tours both in the city and out of town. Saturday, June 9th, Bayfield City Garden Tours. We have five wonderful gardens that will be on tour. And Saturday, June 16th, the Country Garden Tour all around the Apple Country. And there's much, much more going on, but those are just the highlights.
Those are some of the highlights. Some of the highlights, and there are a lot of highlights, that's for sure. Jason Fishbach, you're kind of new in this position. What have you noticed about plant life around this part of the country as compared to other places you might have been?
Right, Larry. I've been here for about 7 months or so, and I'll tell you, as an agriculture agent, there's not a better place to work because of the diversity of agriculture. You've got dairy cows, beef cows, sheep, goats. You've got commercial greenhouses, apple growers, berry growers. You've got vegetable farmers. So it's really a great, diverse place to practice agriculture. You've got diversity of soils, diversity of climate. So it's really been an enjoyable experience so far.
And Don Kissinger, are you worried about the ash trees up here?
Well, we're worried about the ash trees anywhere in Wisconsin, to be quite honest with you. It's something where it could show up anywhere because really when it was found in Detroit in 2002...
Emerald ash borer we're talking about.
Yep, emerald ash borer. They thought that that's where they first found it and where it actually was, and they realized that actually 10, 15 years prior to that is where it was, and it can be so easily moved by people. That's the biggest problem than firewood. It could, even though it's only 30 miles south of our southern borders, it could literally show up anywhere in Wisconsin where people from other states or from Wisconsin have moved firewood. So that's the biggest concern.
So when you come to Bayfield to see Bayfield in bloom, do not bring firewood from outside the state. They would appreciate that very much. And you know what? Every one of our lines is filled. So let's get to the phones and take some calls. And Marty in Lake Nabagabon, you're first. Hi, Marty. Thanks for calling.
Hi, good morning. And just to put in a plug for Port Wing, which is quite near Bayfield, drive over there if you get a chance to see the field of daffodils. It's on the lakeside of Highway 13. It's absolutely unbelievable. It looks like there's snow on that field. It's fabulous. I do have a question, though. Some years ago, a friend gave me a bunch of poppies, those oriental poppies, or I don't know, the reddish-orange ones that everybody's got, and they seem to grow like weeds. And I transplanted them, and they never came back. And this year, I have another friend who wants to give me a bunch of them, and I don't want to blow it this time. So when's the best time to transplant those ubiquitous red-orange poppies?
I'd say early spring, much better than in the fall.
So now would be all right?
Yes. Yeah, and if they're leafing out pretty well right now. It's maybe getting a little bit late, but a little earlier would be better, but you have to go with what you've got. If you've got the opportunity to get them now, I take them with a clump of dirt and transplant them carefully, and they should do well for you. They certainly grow well here.
Yeah, our poppies are in full bloom in the southern part of the state, that's for sure. Beautiful.
Say, Marty, a mix that when I was in Sweden working, it's just gorgeous, where you actually take winter wheat, you plant it in the fall, and then you have your poppies, and in the spring it's just gorgeous. You have these dark green wheat plants mixed with these bright orange poppies, and there's really nothing quite like it.
Wow.
Sounds great.
Thank you.
Thanks, Marty. Appreciate the call. Let's go to Julia in Wanakee next. Hi, Julia.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
I do want to put in a plug for rain barrels. With the climate change, we're all going to need rain barrels. But my question is about shade trees. I'm looking into a shade tree to plant fairly close to my house, And I've heard about new varieties of American elm, one called Valley Forge. Are you familiar with that?
Yes, I'm familiar with Valley Forge. It's a good disease-tolerant elm tree. Now, I guess one thing to qualify is that there is no elm out there, cultivar hybrid, that is 100% tolerant of Dutch elm disease. But Valley Forge is a great elm to plant. Make sure if you're wanting to plant it near your house that you're either planting it on a southwest or northwest corner of the home to give you good shade. You'd want to have it directly south of your home. But Valley Forge is a good hybrid.
Be careful not to... Be careful not to plant it too close to the house, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, how close is too close?
Well, with that, I don't know how wide its berth is there, but I would say not any closer than probably 30 feet from your foundation.
Okay.
That's what I was going to say, 30 feet. That's,
okay,
that should be safe.
Okay,
all right, thanks
thank
a lot.
Much.
Thanks for calling. Appreciate it. Okay. And Tim in Madison, your turn. Hi, Tim.
Hey, how you doing?
Great. Thanks for calling.
All right. Excuse me. I was just munching on a burger. listen. I have tried 2 years now for a pumpkin patch in my, one in my front yard, one in my backyard. And last year, I think I planted a little bit late. It was like around June. Third week of June or so that I tried planting it, and then we got hit with a bad frost in September, and it kind of killed it, my pumpkin patch. I'm wondering, when is the best time to plant a pumpkin patch? I know it's a little cool at night right now. Is it better to wait a little bit, or what?
And you're
what
in the
your
Madison area. Yeah, Jason, what do you think?
Yeah, Tim, you have a couple of options. If you're going to direct seed them, you want to do that after the first average first frost. So for up here, it's early June, late May, depending on the forecast. The other option for you to get a longer season is start your plants early inside or in the greenhouse and then transplant them out after that average first frost date.
Mm-hmm. Good luck. Okay. Give it a try, Tim. Thanks.
All right.
Appreciate
Thank you.
It. You bet. And on to Glenn in Madison.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I enjoy all your Garden Talk programs.
Well, thanks for calling.
I wonder, since I was just in one of our retail kind of chain discount establishments in the Madison area just recently, and noticed that they were selling Zone 6 rhododendrons, perennial shrubs that are Zone 6. And I know enough about plants to know that that's not a good thing in Madison, that Zone 6 plants are not going to survive our winters here, and even sometimes Zone 5 plants aren't going to survive winters in Madison and throughout most of Wisconsin. So I'd just like to encourage the guests to give us a little primer on hardiness zones and to warn the public to be really careful when they're picking their perennial trees and shrubs that retail outlets aren't always selling what they should be selling, and they should know what hardiness zone we're in. And I can tell you in my own yard, I plant Zone 5 because I'm an optimist. But then, even in Madison, we have Zone 5 winters for 4 years, and then we have a Zone 4 winter, and then I have to start over. But yeah. I'd really encourage you to have people educate themselves and maybe challenge their retail chains when they're selling inappropriate materials.
It's a good point.
We'll
start with you.
I think that's a very appropriate comment. I've known over the years people that claim to be able to grow tropical plants in New York City and you name it. I mean, and when I was in my 20s and had a little nursery business, I planted hundreds of flowering dogwood seedlings, and not a one of them survived. You don't want to discourage people from doing a little experimenting, but on the other hand, they shouldn't be encouraged to drop $300 at the local big box store and have it all go away by next spring. Now, up here, selling the qualities of Bayfield, we can grow zone 5 things pretty well here, but it depends on how close to the lake you are. And I think that's something that has to be kept in mind by everybody is microclimate is everything. And if you've got a very, very sheltered location and if you're going to really take care of things, you can do a lot of experimenting and you can be the envy of the community with what you can grow, but you don't want to throw your money away. So it's very, very good comment. Thank you very much.
And there are, as I look around inside the Bayfield Pavilion here, I think we have something like 11 different exhibits, many people who grow plants locally. And I think that's always a kind of a good idea. If you can buy local from local people, you're going to be more assured, I think, of having a plant that's going to survive. Jason.
Especially if you're going to plant native plants that you know grow in your microclimate or your biome.
And does an extension, I was looking, as I looked around the exhibits here today, there was somewhere where there's a nice map that shows all the zones and where those zones are. And I can't remember which exhibit it was. Oh, the DNR's exhibit. And I think if you go online to the UW Extension website, probably also the DNR website, you're going to find those zones and or just request the information from one of those organizations, especially Extension, I think would be able to help you out there. It's always a good idea to get a hold of your county Extension, your hort or ag agent, and they can really help you out.
Sure, and I would just add, if you just Google USDA hardiness and zones, you'll get a nice color map.
Very good point. Thanks very much for calling.
Right. You know, one thing to add about the zones, actually the hardiness zones have changed in the very recent past. They, whether you believe or not, global warming, it's the Earth is warmer, and what used to be zone 3 in many places is now zone 4. What used to be zone 4 is now zone 5. So the hardiness zones have changed. Some publications have put those changes in there, so that's something you want to look at, something that's pretty recent. One thing, when I'm working with my communities, and I work with 18 counties and communities in north central Wisconsin, I do like them to try to push the envelope a little bit, but only with, you know, purchasing 2 or 3 of a certain species that might be one hardiness zone off, just to see, as Art says, you know, if it does well in that microclimate. So I'm not adverse to trying that. If it works out, great. You found a diamond in the rough. If it doesn't, you haven't expended a large amount of money.
Yeah. Talking from the Bayfield Pavilion in Bayfield, Wisconsin, kicking off Bayfield in Bloom. I'm Larry Mueller with my guests Art Odie, Jason Fischbach, and Don Kissinger. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here with a great group of people in the Bayfield Pavilion as we talk gardening. Lots of great people here, and I'm really pleased to once again have the chance to be here. If you'd like to join in with your questions or comments relating to gardening, trees, shrubs, vegetables, flowers, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Or if you're in the Madison area, reach us at 263-1890. And if anybody in the audience has a question, just raise your hand and Jim Packard will wander over and hold the mic for you. In the meantime, we'll take a call from Betty in Fort Atkinson. Betty, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for taking my call. I live in southeastern Wisconsin, and I'm looking to plant my backyard in native plants. And in particular, in my northwest corner, I'm thinking of putting a balsam fir and maybe a couple of male and female junipers. I'm wondering about a balsam fir in southeastern Wisconsin, especially in the city. I really don't see any in my neighborhood. I'm wondering if it's a plant that I can, a tree that I can expect to survive back there.
Well, there may be a reason why you're not seeing any others. Don Kissinger, what do you think?
I'll be honest with you. I don't know how it will do there. I mean, I'm from up in this neck of the woods, and I know it does wonderful in Sawyer County, but I don't know about in the southeast part.
What's your soil type like?
It's fairly loamy.
I think if you really are interested, I would give it a try. I don't think it's a stretch to have it survive there.
What I'm looking specifically for is windbreak in that northwest corner.
No.
Okay.
No. Unless you plant it, unless you plant it behind the windbreak.
No. Okay. So how about a deciduous tree for a windbreak? Is that going to work as windbreak without leaves in the wintertime?
Well, it can. It depends on how severe your condition, your wind conditions are. I'm just going to give you kind of a wild suggestion here. How about does your soil have a fair amount of moisture?
Yeah, it does in the spring especially.
Well, you can kind of have the best of the coniferous and the deciduous worlds if you plant tamarack.
Okay.
Larix laricina. It'll drop its needles in the winter, but you'll have an evergreen hedge during the summer.
Uh-huh. Okay. Well, thank you very much.
All right. Thanks very much for calling.
Bye.
And we have someone from the audience with a question. Okay, so we've got the invasive species being sold under kind of fancy names that really can create problems. We didn't catch everything. The mic was, we were a little off mic or something there, but I think our experts heard the question. Yeah. Art Odie, let's...
There's a problem here in what is in the perception of what is an invasive species, because a species that is invasive in one location may not be a problem in another, and that happens all over the country, and it's a big country. And I'm racking my brain to think of some real good examples, but there are many things that are not invasive in one place that are in another. Well, I can think of one. It isn't exactly local, but the common lilac, for instance, is very invasive up on Manitoulin Island in Canada, and they hate the lilac up there. Well, that's an invasive species in that location, but it's not an invasive species, for instance, here or in many other locations. And the same thing can be said about other things. I think when you're dealing with horticultural things, it's best to really gain as much personal knowledge as you can about what happens in your own backyard. But I don't, you know, the nursery industry has been a very good contributor to the economies and the beautification of the country. And they get a bad rap sometimes because they do overblow things, you know, the miracle tree and all of this kind of thing. But I think invasive species is a very difficult thing to generalize about.
Yeah. All right.
Sylvia, the comment that I'd like to make is that, you know, it's certainly a buyer beware, and there are state and federal programs that evaluate imported plant materials for their potential to become invasive species. It doesn't always work. Certainly, as Art said, some species are invasive here but not there. One option for you and we're starting to see more and more of this, is for a long period of time, we've ignored the North American species, and we've relied for our ornamental plants from, say, European or Asian varieties. Well, we're opening up a can of worms when we do that, but we're starting to look at our own backyards, our native plant communities, looking for native plants, and those are far less likely to become invasive. Certainly some of them will be if they're planted on a large scale, but that's one way to get around the issue is stop buying imported cultivars and start buying native plants.
And let's take another question from the audience.
Jim Collins from Bayfield. We have an invasive plant here, which I like to think of as a kutsu of the north. It's Japanese knotweed, which has got a toehold in a few places here in Bayfield. I wonder what you'd recommend to control Japanese knotweed.
I could answer that one. Dynamite.
That was Art Odie.
Is there any other option, Jason? Have you, aside from dynamite?
More dynamite. No, I think it's going to be a labor-intensive process, and it's likely going to rely on some sort of chemical use. Cutting it and treating the stems, it spreads through rhizomes, so it's highly invasive. It floats down waterways and takes root pretty easily. So it's just like buckthorn. There may never get rid of it, but if you keep working at it, eventually you'll get it under control. But it's going to take a lot of time.
Good question. Thanks. And we'll take a call next. Dave in Eau Claire is next. Hi, Dave.
Hi, how you doing?
Great. Thanks for calling.
I had a question for Don, I guess, in addition to what you said about Emerald Ash Borer. Are there any concerns for pallet material that isn't killed dried, that's made out of ash or wood chips? Are there other ways we should be concerned about the migration of that bug?
That's a good question, too. What about it, Don?
I think on the pallet situation, that is a huge concern, because I don't think that all the pallets that come in have been kiln dried or have been heat treated or chemical treated as they are supposed to be. And I just think that we don't have enough people in the federal realm to check that. But as far as other problems with that, I'm not real aware of that.
Is the USDA then aware of the pallet situation, how that might be a concern?
I mean, that is a huge concern, and that's how they figure it did come in through the Detroit ports. I don't know how they check that. I don't know. I do know that they cannot check every single pallet that comes into the U.S., but that is the big concern that needs to be taken care of in the countries where we are importing those pieces of equipment or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I just wanted to add also to reinforce what was said about zone hardiness and bending the rules. One of the ways to do that I found, too, is planting adjacent to a foundation that has a heated space where you're actually keeping that plant quite warm. And I've bent the rules quite a bit being able to do that with some zone 5 material up in zone 3.
I guess my only concern with that is, as you mentioned, you're putting it next to a foundation. And if you start using something that is a large shrub, tree-type species, there is that concern of actually hurting the foundation, hurting your roof line, things like that. You need to have the proper spacing for the infrastructure of your building, too.
Yeah, I understand that. I've done it mostly with perennials, so. But you're right, woody plants would be a concern. Thanks very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. And we'll take another question from the audience.
From Washburn, and I'm also representing my neighbor Jennifer, and we have dueling gardens in Washburn. We have a common problem of trying to eradicate spreading oregano, and I have had earlier success by digging and pulling, but I occasionally see oregano sprout up under a sidewalk and into a garden space, and she right now is removing pail-sized diameter to bushel basket diameter of oregano, and we're concerned if we are pulling or digging out enough root mass, and if we can also shake that soil from the root mass to preserve the soil for the garden. Do any of you know how to keep oregano under control when it's gone that far?
I'd try that one. Cook more spaghetti.
Yeah, cook more spaghetti. You need to hold some huge parties, spaghetti parties.
Right, but I have had this problem for quite a few years.
Yeah.
Still seeing it. Does it creep through that root system that can't be pulled or dug?
Yeah.
How does it reappear?
Jason, do you know how
that and seeds. If you have limited garden space, you probably won't like this answer, but you might have to take that spot out of production for a bit. And what you can do is basically smother it. You're going to starve that oregano, and you might have to do it for multiple years, but usually 1 year will be fine. Just put heavy black plastic over it, cover the plastic so it's airtight, and what you're going to do is just burn up those seeds, and you're going to kill those root systems by starving them. It might take you a year to get rid of it, but that's one of the best options. Chemicals would certainly be an option, but in a garden situation where you've got so many different types of plants, you really don't want to mess with the herbicides.
Yeah. Good question. Thank you very much. And we'll take a call. Jim in Ironwood, Michigan, you are next.
Yeah,
good morning,
hi,
Jim.
Appreciate the program.
Sure.
I have a triple birch tree that's about 55 feet high. The base diameter is about 15, 12, and 12. And anyway, I've got something boring in. I don't know. It's in a grid pattern, and I tried wiping asphalt and some other composition into the thing, but they just start picking new spots. I even wrapped it with paper shopping bags, and that seemed to keep away for a while. But it seems like wasps were flying around. I don't know if it's a borer, or then there was some sapsuckers, some birds that were, you know, helping themselves there too. So I don't know if it's the birds boring in, or if it's a birch borer of some sort.
Are the holes in a straight line?
Yeah, they're in a perfect grid, like they're playing multiple tic-tac-toe on my tree. Yeah.
And what kind of birch did you say it was?
It's a white birch.
Okay. I would surmise that it probably is bronze birch borer, and that the birds that are coming in there are probably coming in to get that birch borer.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't, where you do have the wounded area, I wouldn't be putting any asphalt in there. If you want to keep the birds from getting the borer, what you could do is use like a hardware cloth, a wire type thing, or actual thin aluminum that you would use for maybe duct work or something like that, that you would put around just in that region
there. Yeah, they just keep picking new spots.
Okay.
Since I wrapped it with the brown paper in a couple of spots, I don't know if it if the timing was the same, but it seemed to kind of keep them away. But I didn't know if it was is it a borer inside, and these there were wasps or something flying around big time.
Okay, I'm not aware of the wasp situation.
Okay.
There is a chemical that you could use that you would want to talk to a arborist about. It's called Merit, that can be put down. It's a systemic, so it has to get into, you know, through the root system into the twigs, into the leaves, and that's where the borer would eat that, and then that would kill them. But you'd want to talk to someone who is a certified pesticide applicator to deal with that.
You might be looking at about a three-stage thing here, where you've got the bronze birch borer, and then the birds coming in and trying to feed on the bronze birch borer and making those round holes, which are attract a certain type of wasp that likes... they actually make little homes in these in these little bore holes. So it could be a three-prong attack going on there. The wasp won't do any harm, I don't
deep,
think.
No. Half an inch deep, the bores, you know?
Yeah.
So I didn't know, what is actually making the holes? Is it the birds going after the bores?
Yes, it's the birds.
Okay.
So, good luck.
What was the chemical again?
Merit.
Merit.
M-E-R-I-T.
Okay. But it's a long process, and I'll just have to saturate as I water it.
As I said, I would talk to a certified pesticide applicator, go to your nursery, something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, I hate to lose it. It's quite old, but thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call.
Okay.
And let's take another question from the audience.
I'm Carol Schock from Lake Nebagaman. We just planted a North Star cherry tree. It has one long lead and four branches that are evenly spaced around, but they're just as straight up in the air as the lead. Can you tell me how I can get it to branch out?
Yeah, you've got a couple options. What that tree is trying to do, as all trees want to do, they want to grow up. They want to get to the sunlight, so those side branches are going up, and you've got to try to stretch them and pull them back down. So there's a couple options. You can get a piece of wood and put it in triangularly between the main stem and the branch to spread it out, or you can tie a weight onto the end of the branches. It's got to be, you know, a delicate balance. You don't want to rip the branch off the tree. The other one, if it's small enough, you use clothespins or even toothpicks to push that stem away from the main stem. The other option is you actually tie an end piece of string or something. You don't want to leave it there because you'll choke the tree, but you tie it onto the end of the branch and then tie that down to the ground or to the main stem, and that'll help spread those branches out. Be careful this time of year because the bark is real pliable, and if you give it too much strain, you might rip some of the bark tissue.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks very much for that question. And by the way, if you'd like to join in as you listen in today, the number to call is 1-800-642-1234, or in Madison at 263-1890. And Rick in Menasha, you are next. Hi, Rick.
Good morning.
Morning.
Say, I'm just trying to look on how to get rid of bamboo.
Ooh.
Hello?
Well, I tell you what, we're doing some remodeling in our home, and we're putting in bamboo flooring because we're told it's a green thing. But your bamboo probably wouldn't work. I don't know who's Jason. You have a comment on it? It's very, very hard to get rid of.
Can tell you that's a question I don't get very often. It's a grass, but I'm going to punt and let my co-guests answer.
Well, I would start with Roundup, I think. But if you have it contained in one spot and don't want it to go any further, you can put down a physical barrier, you know, like a 6-inch deep metal strip or something of that nature, because the rhizomes are fairly, well, they might dive under 6 inches, but you can stop them with a physical barrier to some extent, but I would think Roundup would be what I would use.
You would try that early on.
Yeah, you would have to be repeated applications, I think.
Yeah, because it's growing quick again.
Well, if you keep cutting it back, I mean, any plant, if you cut it back off enough, you're going to weaken it to the point where you may be able to get rid of it. So just keep it mowed down.
Yeah. Okay, well.
It's a lot of work ahead of you, unfortunately, Rick.
There's nothing about digging it up, huh?
Well, bamboo's kind of like quack grass in that respect.
It's stimulated.
You break the rhizomes up into pieces, and then you've got more plants. So
yeah.
You really have to pull it out.
Yeah, and I did that all last fall.
Get every bit of it.
I did it all last fall, but now it's coming back.
Yeah.
Okay, well, good.
All right,
thanks for trying.
Yeah, thanks,
Thank
Rick,
you.
For calling. And Patricia in Madison, your turn. Hi, Patricia.
Good morning. I recently had traveled down south and saw some exquisite flowering dogwoods. From looking through the plant catalogs, I seem to see those that would be adaptable for south central Wisconsin, and yet one of your guests there just had mentioned that his dogwoods had died.
Oh, that was 50 years ago. There might be some better horticultural varieties now that might make it, although I don't think you're going to have a lot of luck with flowering dogwood in Wisconsin anywhere. I really doubt it. Don, what do you think?
I agree. I don't, at least in my zone 3-4 areas, I don't see it as being very prolific.
Yeah.
There is something you might want to try if you just really like the dogwood. You might there's a native Wisconsin shrub. It's not really tree-like, although you can prune it into a fairly good small tree. The pagoda dogwood, Cornus. Help me out, Don. Do you remember the Latin name for pagoda?
No.
Pagoda dogwood, alternifolia, Cornus alternifolia. Very very. Decorative small tree, loose shrub, I would say. Does give that a try rather
a
than.
Shot.
Yeah.
Does it
Thanks a lot for.
Do its branches grow in whorls?
Oh. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, fine. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it very much. We're broadcasting from the Bayfield Pavilion today in Bayfield, Wisconsin, kicking off Bayfield in Bloom. I'm Larry Mueller with Art Odie, Jason Fishbach, and Don Kissinger, and you're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here with my three guests, Art Odie, Jason Fishbach, and Don Kissinger. Really glad to have you listening in today, and it's great to have this wonderful audience as well. And speaking of wonderful audiences, we have a wonderful audience member with a question, so
mayor of the city of Washburn, the nation's first eco-municipality. And I have a question about our library's summer reading program for youth. Their theme this summer is birds and birding and ornithology, and as part of that, they're planting a garden on the library grounds with bird-friendly plants. So I was wondering if you could make some suggestions for our children to plant in our library garden.
That's a wonderful thing to do, and we have some great extension suggestions, I believe. Jason, there's a nice extension publication on that, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, there's a great website which has all of the UW extension publications called learningstore.org, I think it is, or .edu. Those are some really good guides. The thing to be thinking about with these wildlife-type gardens, especially for birds, is two things. One, a food source, but also cover, and cover might be even more important than the food source. So planting a diversity of shrubs would be a good first step. And if you really want to see a lot of birds during the winter months especially, you'd likely have to feed them. But if you give them cover and you're feeding bird seed, you're going to see a lot of wildlife. Some of the fruiting-type shrubs, viburnums especially, they'll like those as well.
And the one extension publication I recall is Landscape Plants That Attract Birds. That's one of the really kind of nice publications, and there are some others as well. DNR may have some of those, too. I don't know. Don, do you remember? I'm
not aware of that.
Not aware of it right off the top. Okay. Thanks for that question. Appreciate it. And let's go to Jerry in Franklin next. Hi, Jerry.
Good morning, gentlemen. Thank you for answering my questions, hopefully. I have just purchased the house, and we put up a fence, and my wife's got this idea that with all the dirt from the post holes, which is a lot of clay, to put it around a big tree. I don't know what kind of tree it is. It's about 3 foot in diameter, though, and it seems to me that I remember that this could damage a tree.
Yes, basically any time you add more than a couple inches of soil or start taking away a couple inches of soil from the tree, whether it's the base of the tree or all the way out to the drip line, which is the perimeter of the limbs, you're starting to ask for trouble. Roots of trees need oxygen, and by covering them with soil, especially a heavier soil that is laden with clay, you're asking for trouble. The thing that, and it sounds like you're trying to find a place to put these this soil that came from the holes, but putting wood chip mulch would be a good thing around or from outside of 2 to 3, 4 inches outside of the trunk to the drip line, 2 to 4 inches in depth, would be something that's great for any tree. I love to see mass mulching, and that can only enhance the looks and also keep the soil moisture in tune and actually insulate the soil too and help keep weeds down to some extent.
And okay, you mentioned a couple of inches away from the tree. I just wanted to maybe emphasize that because you see so many times with new soil and mulch where it's mulch right hard up against the bark of those trees.
That's a good example, Larry. And we call that volcano mulching, and that is terrible because actually what it'll do is it'll become so moist there, especially with new plantings, that you will start to have the bark rot away. Another thing that it does is it allows in the wintertime the meadow mice and voles a great insulated area to come right up to the trunk of the tree and girdle the trunk of the tree. So that's why you want to keep it, two reasons. You want to keep it away so you don't have these rodents getting close to it. Also, you want the root collar area, which connects to the trunk. You want that to be somewhat dry right there because you don't want to have any rotting occur.
You know, it occurs to me that maybe your wife is just trying to keep you busy. Has she suggested that you take this clay and dig a hole and bury it?
I have two more questions for you. These are quick
okay.
ones.
He's ignoring you, aren't you? Well, with good reason, too. Go ahead, Jerry.
What is the best time to trim both a lilac bush and a crabapple tree?
Right after they bloom.
Yeah,
particularly the lilac.
Okay. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And just probably about a third, go down, take the biggest lilac branches and cut them right down to the ground, and maybe about a third or probably no more than that.
Okay. Thank you, Larry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks very much. Let's take another question from the audience.
My question is, what is a good source of wood chips? Do packaged bark chips have undesirable insects in them? What is the best thing to do if we don't want to get wood chips that have unwelcome visitors?
I think a local tree trimmer, particularly if you can get someone that will assure you that it's not that the chips are not coming from a diseased tree, but if it's just chips from trimmed trees or dead trees that just have fallen and have no particular disease problem, I think local chips are good. You're not bringing any organism in from a long way, if you're bringing in any organism at all. And usually in the process of chipping, you're usually getting rid of beetles and grubs and things like that. So contact your tree person. You ought to be able to get a real good deal.
Jason, did you want to add something? Or?
Yeah, I'd echo those sentiments. I think it's really easy, certainly, to go and just buy bags of wood chips and mulch and that kind of thing, but you don't know where that stuff came from necessarily. So it's good, especially if you're a larger gardener or a group of gardeners in the neighborhood, get to know your tree care professionals. Find out what kind of products, mulches, and wood chips they've got, because a lot of times what happens is they've got an excess of wood chips they're looking to get rid of. And the other thing is it's been sitting there for a while, so it likely has had some decomposition, which is good because otherwise you're adding pure carbon. It ties up a lot of the nitrogen. So if you can get some composted wood chips, then you've got another valuable to work with.
Last year I was going to buy wood chips, and I noticed that they were from Michigan. And I steered clear of them, because of the emerald ash borer problem.
And I guess that's something that is a good idea. When they chip the wood chips from ash trees, and if you got something from Michigan, it shouldn't have been anything from an ash tree, but what they're saying is if the chips are less than 1 inch in two dimensions, the emerald ash borer or EAB should not, the larva should not be able to survive that. But I guess I would take a look and see that if you're going to look at purchasing something, that it is something from in-state, if you can.
Mm-hmm. Good question. And let's take a call from Irene in Wautoma. Hi, Irene.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
My husband just purchased a tree spade, and I was wondering if he could use that to transplant some large, well-established lilac bushes on our property.
Got a new piece of equipment and wants something to do with that new piece of equipment. Don Kissinger, what about that?
I guess that's something that he could try, but I would not try it this time of the year. Basically, you want to wait until after the leaves have dropped, and you probably, depending on the size of the clump, the roots from this shrub are probably pretty widespread, so you may want to do some pruning, kind of clean it out a bit, wait a year, and then try using the spade on that. But definitely it should not be done when the tree is flowering when the lilac shrub is flowering or leafing out or in leaf.
Okay, so if we do try it in the fall, early fall?
After the leaves have dropped, that would be fine.
And could we prune it right after a flowering this year, Don, and then maybe give it a shot?
You could prune some. I guess I'd probably wait a year, but you can prune after the flowering. Typically, the best time to prune is when they are not in leaf, but the second best time is when they're fully leafed out or after flowering, as Jason and Art had said.
Maybe I could start a little bit of a discussion here about tree spades, maybe with a little trepidation, I see no problem with digging trees with tree spades. But one of the things that I've come across over the years is, and this is just a hint for your husband on how I think not to do it anyway, and maybe, Don, you could tell me whether you agree with me or not. Oftentimes you see tree spaders come and dig the hole for the tree that is to be put in with the tree spade. Then they go and get the tree, dig it with the tree spade, and come and put it right in that hole. And I think that is a perfect way to kill a tree or a lilac or anything else. because you have not prepared the soil around the tree that's being planted. And I see it happen all the time, and I've seen the results over the years, and it's about 50% loss, as far as I can say. As far
and
as
usually
I can
doesn't
see.
Happen right away either.
Yeah, and it takes a couple of years. So,
and are you speaking of the glazing effect that occurs from the blades of the spade?
That, and there's probably some other factors too. You're not loosening up the soil so that those roots can get out of the tree ball, and you're not giving it any room for moisture and so forth.
You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. News coming up, but we'll be right back with our guests, Art Odie, Jason Fischbach, and Don Kissinger. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Larry Mueller, broadcasting from the Bayfield Pavilion in Bayfield, Wisconsin, to kick off Bayfield in Bloom. It's a month-long celebration, your chance to really see some of the wonderful things going on in Bayfield. Art Odie was talking about some of the events. There are a lot of events going on. I should also mention that the Shawamigan Bay Birding and Nature Festival is going on as well, mostly out of Ashland, Wisconsin, but it's a nearby neighbor. And so I think for information on all of those, not only the birding program with field trips and other types of programs, open houses and drop-ins at the Northern Great Lakes Visitor Center, but also for Bayfield and Bloom. I think if you go to travelbayfieldcounty.com, travelbayfieldcounty.com online, and you're going to find out some more information that's going on. And a wonderful group of activities, and what a great place to be at this time of the year. I tell you that for sure. Art Odie, our guest today, along with Jason Fischbach and Don Kissinger, we're talking all things gardening, the trees, the vegetables, the flowers, you name it. You can give us a call at 800-642-1234 in Madison at 263-1890. And we'd be happy to take your questions. We've got a great audience here today. And they've had their questions as well. Jim Packer, do we have another question from the audience? We do.
Hi, my name is Shirley. I was wondering, is there a holly that can be grown in this area?
A holly.
There are some fairly hardy hollies, the traditional hollies. But if you really want something that I know personally will grow here that is a very close relative of the holly and has the same appearance, although it's a shrub, not a Christmas tree shaped holly, that would be the Oregon grape holly, and they do beautifully here, and they have a very nice bloom and very nice blueberries. If you really want to have something that's hardy right here, and I know it's hardy, try the Oregon grape holly.
And can we get that at a nursery locally here?
You can certainly get it through a good nursery catalog. I don't know if anybody locally grows it or not.
All right, thanks for that question. And let's go to Matthew in Summit Lake, who's got a phone question. Hi, Matthew.
Hey, guys, how's it going?
Great, thanks for calling.
Yeah, well, thank you. I just would like to give everybody a heads up on an internet site that's out there for native plants. So if a person wanted to plant native plants on their property and not have to plant, say, the exotic ones that might take over, I created this website. I'm the land use specialist for Lang Lake County, and all they have to do is go to Lang Lake County, Wisconsin, and type that into the search engine along with shoreland restoration, and they can customize their plan. All they have to do is answer a series of four questions with soil type, soil moisture, gradient, and sun exposure, and it'll kick out all the plants that won't grow there and only give them the plants that will grow there. There's about 400 to 500 in the database, and all of them are very easily bought through different greenhouses. So right there, that's a very good...
So that website again was...
Just type in Langlade County, Wisconsin, Shoreland Restoration.
Langlade County, Wisconsin, Shoreland Restoration.
Yes, and for those... the gentleman before had a question on Japanese knotweed, which is getting to be a big problem around our neck of the woods, too. That's also on the... How to eradicate that is also on our website. And also, I got that information from Dr. Elizabeth Zarpata from the UW, Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
She has a book called Invasive Plants of the Upper Midwest and How to Eradicate Them.
Okay. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Okay. And we'll take another John in Highbridge. We'll give you a chance. Hi, John.
Hi. I have a recurring question here in the neighborhood. A number of us are putting in new fruit trees. And the question is, when you first put the tree in, you know, these are probably 5 foot tall, 6 foot tall trees, that first year, instead of them trying to put energy into fruit, should you pick the flowers off to discourage the fruiting and just let them build their root system?
It's a great idea. The same thing with new strawberry plantings. It's very hard to do, though, because you see those flowers and you know what's coming, and to give up that fruit, not easy to do. But, yeah, it's a great, great thing to do, it's especially that first year.
Okay, and would that also apply to shrubs like service berries?
Yep.
Would as well. Mm-hmm. Thanks for calling, John. Should we take another call? Let's take another question from the audience. Hi.
Hi, my name is Kate. I had a question about shrubs. A friend of mine is looking for a long-blooming shrub for the summer in the sun. So I'm wondering if you have any ideas for that.
Well, the hydrangeas are great. I mean, if you want to stay strictly native, I don't think you're going to find anything, but hydrangeas will fill that request for you very well.
Okay. Thanks for that question. And let's see, we've got Bill in Dousman next. Bill, hello.
Hi. Hi, Larry. How are you doing? Hi, guys.
Great. Thanks for calling.
Yes, thanks. I've got a question. I've got myself into a situation where I'm a novice tomato grower, okay, and I'm in a tomato growing competition this year with some hybrid heirloom tomatoes, a Black Crim, an old German Wisconsin 55, and a mortgage lifter, I believe. I'm looking for any helpful hints on winning the competition.
Well,
I'm pulling out all the stops here to try to get
You're pulling
this
out all the stops. All right, well. Right. Jason Fishbach has won many tomato competitions. Yeah. No, he hasn't, but yep, you might have a suggestion.
Yeah, boy, that's. What's the contest? Is it size, number of fruit?
I'm sure volume of fruit. We really haven't determined it. So, any suggestions that would be helpful? Thanks.
Okay. Well, it's going to start with your soil. You've got to make sure you've got plenty of organic matter. Have you planted them already, or are they still in the greenhouse?
Still in the greenhouse.
Okay. Well, that's good. Then you can prepare your soil. You can do it in the greenhouse. They certainly like plenty of heat, as long as they get water. That might be a good first.
We lost him. But that's all right. Go ahead anyway. He's probably
still
listening.
Yeah, so you can add plenty of heat. You know, the tomatoes especially, they love the heat. So leave them in the greenhouse if you've got space to put them into the ground. Otherwise, you know, you want to get them outside, make sure they're well trellised. If you're looking for size of tomatoes, you can consider decapitating the vine. You know, don't let it keep growing and growing. Trim off as much of those shoots that come out the base, and so you're trying to, you know, pick 5 or 10 or 20 flowers depending upon the variety, and those are going to be your tomatoes. So it's forcing the plant to put all its energy into those tomatoes instead of making foliage and filling up every square inch of your yard. So
I had a good friend, Fritz Albert, who was a German fellow from Madison, lived near the university, and he always had these great tomato plants with lots of tomatoes, and I asked him what his secret was, and he said he only University of Wisconsin Dairy Farm was located nearby, and he only used manure from university cows. So I don't know if that'll work or not, but so good luck with that. You're going to have to call at the end of the season and let us know how this turns out, by the way. Thanks a lot. I wonder what's riding on this. It sounds like it might be a neighbor competition. And let's take another call. Dick in Pittsville. Hi.
Hi. I have 6 apple and pear trees that are in a group, and I've covered the ground surrounding them with about 2 inches of wood chips. And I get beautiful apples and pears, but what's the best way to fertilize the trees?
Did you do the soil testing before you planted the trees? Do you have some idea what your phosphorus and potassium levels are?
No, I do not.
Okay. It'd be a good idea first to do a soil test, or even better is to do a foliage test where you take a cutting of a couple of leaves, the mature leaves, and you can send them into the university testing facilities. And they're going to tell you if you're missing any micronutrients or any other problems, and then they'll give you some nutrient recommendations. Usually those are applied with a foliar spray, so it goes right into the plant. The other option is you can buy these slow-release fertilizer stakes. You put them in about the drip line of the fruit trees, and they'll slowly release nutrients. But it's a good idea to test that foliage. It sounds like you're looking to produce good apples, so I'd go that route. Test that foliage and see what you're missing, and then just add only that.
Thank you.
And your county, thanks a lot. And your county extension office can help you out in terms of getting the sample in and that sort of thing.
Okay.
Thanks a lot for calling. Let's take another question from the audience.
Christine Kurz, editor of the Spencer Connection. I had a white morning glory come last summer, so I let it grow, and when it got up to 6 feet, it bloomed profusely. Only problem is it's killing everything else out. How do I get rid of it outside of pulling it?
That's a good question. Art, what do you Art Odie, what do you think?
I always believe in going with success. I just go with the clematis and be done with it.
But if you don't want to do that, which it sounds like she doesn't, Art.
Well, I guess this is a little, maybe a little experimental, but I would try taking a garden spade and cutting around that that clematis and cutting the roots so that it isn't going all over, and starve it a little bit so it isn't so vigorous.
Yeah, it's growing all over, under everything, even the concrete around the boards. It's just crazy.
Yeah, I try and reduce its vigor a little bit, and certainly don't fertilize it.
Wow. Or maybe with some Roundup. Thanks very much for that question. Sharon and Eitzen, your turn now. Hi, Sharon.
Hi. My question is a little different. Is I have some of these old red tulips, and I want to get rid of them. I know if I dig them out, I can get rid of them. But can I just pull out the green part, and will that kill it or not?
I think you'd better dig them up, personally. They shouldn't be that deep. I would dig them up.
Okay. And the other question I have is, I love trilliums, and I have a few, but I'd like to be able. Where's the best location to plant them?
Well, they're a woodland flower, so you want to plant them in at least partial shade, and the shade should be deciduous tree shade rather than evergreen shade, because they do want sun in the spring when they're ephemerals. When they first come up, they want sun. But other than that, sort of a woodland environment, and I don't think you'd have to do anything terribly difficult to them outside of be sure that they've got a good loamy soil and that they're a little bit protected.
Mm-hmm. Remember, those trilliums take a few years before they're going to flower, so don't get discouraged if you don't see flowers early on.
Well, this is I planted them 2 years ago, and I have one clump that has many flowers. I mean, maybe half a dozen. And then some others that don't have, maybe they have two flowers. So I planted them in different locations. Some are under pine trees, and actually the one that's doing the best is under an oak tree.
Well, thanks very much for calling.
Thank you.
Appreciate your call. Let's take another question from the audience.
Hi, Robin Arbuckle from Lake Minnesung. Is it true that if your plant flowers in the spring, you could transplant it in the fall? Does the flowering have anything to do with transplanting?
Well, I guess you might say if it flowers in the spring, it's most vigorous in the spring and probably would transplant well in the fall. Yeah, I think that's probably a good rule of thumb. I had never thought of it that way, but sure.
Typically, when transplanting anything, it's best to do it when the plant is dormant, so late in the fall or first thing in the spring. So the flowering itself doesn't necessarily matter. It's just do it when it's dormant or as far away from the flowering period as you can, because that is when it's the most delicate condition.
All right. That took a little guesswork out of should I or shouldn't I. So.
Okay. Thank you very much. Lois in Eau Claire, your turn. Hi, Lois.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call, and I envy you all up there in Bayfield. My question is, I have several large 50-year-old plus bur oaks in my front yard. Around a couple of them, I just can't get any grass going. And in those areas, in the spring when the snow melts, there might be water sitting for maybe a day or two, never longer than that. If I would mulch that area and do it as you had directed earlier in the program, is that going to be a problem because there is a little bit of collection of water in those areas only because of the way the yard dips a little bit?
What do you think, Don Kissinger?
And you're saying that you're mulching because of the fact that you aren't being able to grow grass?
Right. There's just no way. It's quite shady, of course. Yeah. And can't get anything else to really grow there. And then when you said it was good to mulch around trees, being careful not to get too close, then I thought because there is that little bit of collection of water, but for a very short time.
I don't see that
as a problem.
No, I don't see that as being a problem at all. And again, when you mulch, you know, if you're going to mulch to a wide area in a mature tree like that, you know, make sure it's 2 inches to 4 inches maximum.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much. Appreciate that call. And let's go to Bob next in Jackson. Bob, hello to you. Bob, are you there? We may have lost Bob. Bob, are you there? Well, let's try somebody. Let's try Kathleen in Milwaukee.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
This is the first year I've been able to harvest some rhubarb because the plant has just gotten started over the last couple of years. But I was wondering if there's sort of a standard as to how much of the plant I can harvest and how much I really need to leave behind to maintain its vigorousness and to keep it growing and spreading.
What do you think, Jason?
Well, there's no, you know, magic rule of thumb, but let's make one up. It's something like half of the stems. The main thing is to snip the flowers off when they come out. That's going to keep it from putting energy into flowering and keeping that vegetation healthy. So about half the plant. You could probably, you know, the older plants, you can get away with more than the younger plants because they've got a bigger root system. They can handle a little bit more harvesting.
Okay, great. I can make another pie. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. 1-800-642-1234. Or if you're in the Madison area, reach us at 263-1890. And let's go to Bob in Jackson next. Bob, hi.
Hi. Good afternoon, Larry and guests. Wonderful show, and we did have a chance to do a big top Chautauqua a number of years ago. You are in God's green earth up there, sir.
Yeah, we sure are.
My question is on service berries. A number of years ago, we bought from the local Rotary Club or Extension or somewhere where my wife buys our plants about a dozen service berries. They were sold as service berry trees. I started to nip the suckers. And I am finding that you don't nip these suckers because they are just all over. And my question is the service berry really supposed to be a shrub or can you grow it as a tree?
I can take that one, I think. If you have a true shrub service berry, that probably was a variety that was sold specifically for its fruiting characteristics, and it's not going to be a tree. There are some shrubby service berries, but if you really want a landscape quality service berry that is tree-like, that's the type that you have to buy. But I think, have you tried harvesting? Do you use the fruit?
Oh, the fruit is there. We had just a gorgeous yard. Like I say, we've got a dozen of them. And the flowers here this spring, or the blooms, I should say, I suppose, they were just gorgeous. Absolutely
well, I think,
gorgeous.
You know, you've got what you've got, and use the fruit and enjoy the flowers, and I don't think they're going to be trees for you.
And
sorry,
I'll,
Bob.
Well, that's no problem. I mean, they're a very pretty. Oh, man, are they great in the spring. So, well, thanks a lot, guys.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. And on to Mary in Pine River. Hi, Mary.
Hi, for the guy who's in the tomato off, but I found that works really, really well is to mulch with grass clippings because it keeps down the mildew or any of the black rot that comes on the tomato leaves and the spotted, whatever they call it. So just to mulch with the grass clippings. Okay?
That's a good suggestion because as that grass breaks down, it will release its nitrogen. The other thing, too, what is finicky with tomatoes, if the temptation, especially if you're in a contest, I think, is to water, water, water. But what's going to happen is those tomatoes are going to get big, and then they're going to split, and then you're not going to win the contest. Well, maybe.
So you need to be careful about yep. how much water.
So the mulch really helps because you don't have to add as much. The important thing is you've got to monitor the plants, and it comes with experience. If they start to show that they're wilting, of course, water. But don't overwater tomatoes, and it's hard to know. But mulching helps retain that moisture when you do add it.
I have a little caveat as far as using grass clippings for mulching anything, and that is be sure that you're not using any kind of a weed killer on your lawn that's going to collect in the leaves, or you will damage or kill whatever you're mulching with it as it decomposes.
So very good tips there. Boy, we're having lots of fun today. I did want to say thanks to some people, by the way, before I forget about it. Certainly John Munson and Paul Coelho from KUWS in Superior. I think Paul told me he was here till about 11 or 11:30 at the pavilion last night setting up our broadcast and put a lot of time in. And of course, John is a great organizer. And also I wanted to thank Rattle Davidson and Keisha Mabra and Cale Plowman who are helping out back in our Madison studios. And a big thanks as well to our guests today, Art Odie. Art has been involved with the Bayfield Chamber for quite a long time. He is an horticultural landscaper. He's a judge for American Bloom Competition. He tells me that Bayfield may be entering the America in Bloom Competition next year, so we'll find out. That's still up in the air yet, but that may be happening. Jason Fishbach is the Ashland-Bayfield County Extension Agricultural Agent and has done a wonderful job today and probably every day. Probably every day. They're all looking at me. What is he going to say next? What's going to pop out of his mouth there? But he's done a great job today. Big thanks to him and also to Don Kissinger, the West Central Regional Urban Forestry Coordinator for the Department of Natural Resources with his office in Wausau. And, of course, a great big thanks to our audience today and to all the people from Bayfield and the folks from Eau Claire who came over to be with us today. We've had a great audience. We've had a wonderful time. And thank you for listening on the air as well to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio and Garden Talk.